College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
1 hour of Jones and Keith left for you with Megan Ottolini and John Lyons filling in. And we are joined now on our guest hotline by Chris Cotillo of Mass Live. Chris, do we catch you leaving Penn Station? Where are you right now in the greater Manhattan area?
Yeah, I'm under the shadow of the Empire State Building right now, so you can't write scripts like this.
Oh, wow. Beautiful. Thank you for setting the scene for us. You, of course, have been covering this Red Sox team for several years now. You've seen the ups and downs of the Red Sox, especially in the late summer, post-trade deadline, all-star, all of that with Alex Cora. How worried should fans be by the last two series that the Red Sox dropped?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's three games. They won the first two against Miami, which seems like a while ago because those are three, you know, not great losses, especially, you know, Sunday against Miami and then Tuesday, probably the worst of the year. Maybe that's recency bias, but when you have that many opportunities, late in the game, it's definitely tough. You know, I think it's just you see, you know, over those three games, a couple of holes exposed when it comes to the roster being, you know, top heavy and not having a ton of depth, right? I mean, you look at, there's like eight or nine players on the team that have kind of held this thing together for a while. And they're the reason that they have been, you know, very good over the last 2.5 months. Rowan Anthony right at the top of that list, but obviously Bregman and the bullpen, Chapman and Whitlock in the rotation, Bayo, Giolito, Crochet. Beyond that, you know, there's a lot of guys that you're asking a lot from. And we've seen ups and downs from those guys. So I think that they are, you know, with the group they have, fully healthy and getting Justin Slayton back and maybe a reinforcement or two from AAA, you know, a good team and one we expect to contend over the next 6 weeks. But if any of those kind of stars, that group of 8, 9, 10 guys gets hurt or more than one gets hurt, it could be ugly because you just don't have, I think, that depth across the roster and some places where it's important, especially the bullpen.
Chris, you mentioned the depth there that the Red Sox are lacking, and something we've seen the last few years is after the trade deadline, they've tailed off significantly, missed the playoffs, obviously. How do you feel about them this year? I mean, I know you mentioned it's just three games that they lost, and they did win the first two against Miami, but are you more confident in them kind of staying the course and being a playoff team this year? Do you have any concerns that this could be early signs of them tailing off as they have the past couple years after underwhelming trade deadlines?
I mean, I think it comes down to pitching. You know, with them, they obviously have had a lot of injuries there. It doesn't feel that way for some reason, but, you know, Houck out for the year, Cutter Crawford won't pitch this year, Patrick Sandoval hasn't and won't, and then, you know, Hunter Dobbins, who was actually a bright spot in the rotation, out. That's four starters you're down. So they need really Crochet to not take a step back, and he hasn't other than one start in Houston, and Bayo and Giolito to be really, really good down the stretch and hope you catch lightning in a bottle with Dustin May and maybe Walker Buehler, or you move on and call up a Kyle Harrison. So I just think, like, when you look at that group, you need them to keep hitting that, you know, 90th percentile outcome to keep staying in this thing. Any step back from the rotation, and it's going to be tricky because they don't have the depth, and obviously those guys are getting to a point of a high workload. You know, where they are, though, is in a better place in the standings. I think that's obviously inarguable. You know, they're in possession of a playoff spot. There's still a couple games between them and the teams behind them, you know, whether it be Kansas City or Cleveland and Texas further back. Seeding matters, but I think, you know, the main objective is just going to be getting in, and that's what they'll try to do. You know, starting tonight with I think, you know, you look at a four-game series against the surging Yankees team, it's, you know, as crunch time gets.
What do you see going on with the situational offense from this team? Obviously, they load the bases three straight innings in the last game that we saw them and weren't able to bring anyone home. Can you see any common denominator between these types of games where they're not able to get the runs in?
Yeah, I mean, it was an issue early in the season. And then I think, you know, really from the time Anthony came up, for whatever reason, there was just a contagious kind of feeling, you know, him coming up and then Bregman coming back. And then when they flipped the leadoff spot and put him there and Duran third, especially the offense had been, you know, delivering and getting hits in those runners in scoring position situations. And it had been a group that had done that and been pretty good with that over the course of a few months. You know, so it's probably a regression to the mean a little bit the other night. Obviously, it played out as badly as it possibly could have. I think, you know, you look at, you know, the three situations they had there. The first one, I think they just got beat by this Rico Garcia guy who I'd never heard of, honestly. But
yeah, what is up with that?
And was...
Cotillo, he's on like three different teams this year.
Right.
And he throws just like great stuff, and he's 31 years old.
Yeah, I was a, that was just a, like, wow, tip your hat to this guy for some reason. And then, you know, the third of the three, Abraham Toro, who was just DFA'd, he hit an absolute rocket to the wrong place, you know, hit the ball hard, and there was a double play ball. There's not much you can do about that. The one, you know, I would question is that Geraldo is walking the world in the ninth inning, and Trevor Story swings and chases on the first pitch there. That was probably the second guess, and obviously, you know, that put him behind in that at-bat. So I think it just kind of played out, and it was so bad that it makes it seem like a problem. They've actually been pretty good with it. You know, I think the top of the lineup for a while now, you see what Anthony can do as an on-base machine, and then Bregman right behind him, Duran, Story. From there, they need somebody else to step up, you know, whether it be Abreu, who's banged up right now. Rafael has been horrendous since the break. Yoshida has not shown that he is a guy who should be in the middle of the order. So, you know, maybe Nathaniel Lowe's the guy. You have him hit fifth or sixth and see if he can carry you and get hot. He had a big homer the other night. You know, maybe Rafaela gets on a heater. We've seen that, obviously, already this season. Maybe Narvaez, with some extra rest here, gets to the point where he can be the five or the six. But for now, a little top-heavy, but still a pretty good group when everybody's in it.
Talking to Chris Cotillo of Mass Live. And Chris, I want to follow up on something you just said, because Abraham Toro has been DFA'd. You mentioned Nathaniel Lowe and his home run the other night. What are some reasonable expectations? Because I think a lot of Red Sox fans, they think, oh, well, the Nationals stink and they DFA'd this guy, so how much better can he be here in Boston? But what are some reasonable expectations for Nathaniel Lowe these final 6-7 weeks of the season?
Yeah, I think when you look at, you know, the Nationals, what's the point, you know, when you're a team, you know, 25 games under 500, of seeing a 31-year-old who's going to be, you know, basically non-tendered after the season? What do you want to see from him over 6 weeks when you have young guys you can assess? You know, it's a really valuable time for bad teams because they can call up young guys and see who plays well, and I think that's what they're trying to do. If he was on a contender, you know, maybe he gets a longer leash, and they hope that, you know, because he's been a playoff performer in the past, he can do it down the stretch. I think that was kind of a perfect fit for the Red Sox at the perfect time. They weren't able to get that first baseman at the trade deadline. They waited 2 weeks and gave up literally nothing, like $250,000, which is not nothing to me, but to them it is. And I feel like, you know, that was the type of thing that they can have him play a very specific role. He's going to play against righties. You have Roman Gonzalez taking care of that position against lefties. And it just is a guy with, as you've seen with the stat line, the same floor as Toro, right? But a much, much higher ceiling. The pop, obviously, we saw that display. That was the 17th homer of the year. A guy who, like I said, you know, he had three postseason homers for the Rangers 2 years ago when they won the World Series, including two in that dramatic ALCS against Houston. You know, Bregman was talking about what he's seen from afar because, you know, the Rangers beat them in that series 2 years ago. So it's a guy, I think, that, you know, can come in for these last 6 weeks, and a guy who you feel better about starting in a playoff game than Abraham Toro. And to get him for that price, I think is, you know, pretty good this time of year. Kind of fell into their lap, and he's a guy who's not going to be afraid. And I think he's going to play a lot here. To expect that he's going to come out and, you know, give you top of the lineup production is probably a little silly considering he's hit 215 all year. But he's a guy that has that track record, and, you know, that's something.
The Red Sox have had the 5-1 edge over the Yankees this season so far. Last time they saw them, they swept them, and then they shipped off Rafi Devers almost immediately. What grade would you give this team's performance since the Rafael Devers trade? And do you think this is a better team right now going into this Yankees series than they were in that June weekend when they swept them at Fenway?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably, you know, a B+. You know, they have played really well. They've taken care of business against some bad teams. They've played really well against some good teams, as we've seen. I think, you know, honestly, people look at the Devers trade as, like, it was one of the biggest pieces of news that we've seen in the last few years in the Red Sox beat, for sure, and it was shocking. And we know everything that came with it. You know, when you look at since that date, like, that's kind of right around when Anthony took off. And I would say he's been the Red Sox MVP, you know, since right about then. You know, he had about a slow 2 weeks when he first came up, and since then has been absolutely phenomenal for them. So I would say it's more about that and what he's brought to the lineup. You know, he's basically, you know, obviously not the pop, but definitely the on base for the production, you know, making it feel like that Devers hole wasn't there. And I think they did a good job, you know, withstanding that, you know, 7 weeks without Bregman. You know, they kept their head above water, and then once he came back, they were able to kind of start rolling, even though he was a little slow at the beginning. And, you know, have to give them credit. And I've said all year that there's a lot of Red Sox teams in the last few years that have kind of, you know, had adversity in whatever fashion kind of sinked them. This is a group that's embraced it, and they've kind of pushed through whatever's happened, whether it be, you know, the Devers trade or catastrophic injuries or drama or a bad trade deadline, whatever it is. They're in this position because they've been resilient, no question about that.
So, Chris, we've talked about the Red Sox having troubles with situational hitting as of late. The Yankees are 16th in opponent's batting average with runners in scoring position. Luis Gil hasn't pitched that well since coming back. Max Fried has been struggling as of late, too. I mean, do you look at this series beyond just being obviously Red Sox-Yankees in the playoff race? Is this a good opportunity for the Red Sox to kind of improve some of those situational moments and situational metrics?
I mean, no matter how they get it done, you know, winning 3 out of 4 here would be incredible. Splitting would give you the season series and the tiebreaker, which is, you know, no small thing come October. So, you know, I think for me, it always starts with starting pitching. They have their 3 top guys, not in order, but going, you know, these next 3 days in Giolito, Bayo, who's always dominated the Yankees, and then also, you know, Crochet on Saturday. And, you know, May has been pretty good in his last 2 outings. So, you know, we'll see. The Red Sox are facing 2 lefties without Ref Snyder, which I think is a bigger loss for that than people acknowledge. But, you know, just find a way to win, no matter how it comes. High-scoring games, low-scoring games, crazy things happen at the Bronx. We've seen that over time. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay, Chris Cotillo, because we probably won't talk to you before Labor Day, how are you feeling about your very own UNC Tar Heel football team? And what are your expectations? For those that don't know, you are a massive UNC fan, UNC alum. And what are your expectations for Bill Belichick's Tar Heels?
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying 9-3, which is obviously hopeful because I don't know many members of the roster. But, I mean, it's a guy that I think, you know, has shown that he can out-coach his way to wins historically. And that's against NFL coaches. And when you're going up against the likes of Cal and Stanford and Richmond and Charlotte and the teams that are on their schedule, you know, I think that there's probably going to be an edge there. So there's a lot of question marks. No one really knows about the roster. No one knows if Jordan Hudson's going to have a headset or not. My guess is yes. But I know that, you know, there is a huge, huge amount of excitement for Labor Day. Mass Live will be well represented both in the press box and the stands that day for the game against TCU, College Game Day, the whole thing. So I'm excited for it. The way I always put it is the floor is so low that, you know, if this was Bama or LSU or one of those schools that have standards when it comes to football and has a place to, or, you know, has some room to fall, I wouldn't feel great about the risk. But it's, you know, it's North Carolina. It's a 6-6, 7-6. Duke's Mayo Bowl type of operation. And, you know, the ceiling is the roof, as the great Michael Jordan said.
Okay, Chris Cotillo of Mass Live, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with your coverage in this 4-game series out in the Bronx. We hear some of that New York atmosphere right behind you, so we're going to let you go now. But, yeah, where can everybody find your work?
Mass Live and the Fenway Rundown podcast.
All right, wonderful. Thank you, Chris. So some previews there and what you can look forward to in that Red Sox-Yankees series, maybe what you can look forward to with a little UNC football. And I know that there was a one-on-one that was gained by one Boston Globe's Ben Volen, and you wanted to touch on this a little bit, John Lyons. So right after we hit trending with Billy Lanny, we are going to talk a little bit about Bill Belichick and UNC football.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jones and Keith. The boys are out today. Megan Ottolini and John Lyons with you for about another half hour here.
Stuck with us.
Yep.
Busy, and tomorrow.
Busy, busy day in Boston sports. We've got, we got a final preseason game. Still don't know exactly who's playing in this preseason game. Would assume that Javon Baker is playing in it because he traveled down to New York. As I said earlier, I think that indicates that my beloved Efton Chisholm III has probably made the roster because, yes,
that way.
He has an injury. I don't think it's a serious one. They're not pushing him through that injury, so I think they're indicating that they've seen enough in a good way. They've seen enough in a good way. They love Efton, just like everybody that I've ever spoken to who's ever coached Efton adores the kid. I think he's on the team. But before we get to further Red Sox talk, Patriots talk, I know, John, that you read Ben Volen's piece in the Boston Globe about UNC football, and there was some things that Bill Belichick said that jumped out to you. So do you want to read these comments from one
Bill
Belichick?
Sure. So, and going back, I don't know if you've read Bill's book that he wrote, The Art of Winning.
You know what? I didn't read it.
Okay, so I read it, and there's a line in there. There's no mention of Kraft, but there's a line in there about a fractured relationship in Foxborough led to them not winning games, which was a direct shot at ownership. And then this today, and obviously they've had little sniping bits back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a paragraph here where Bill says to Volen, there's no owner, and here's the part, Mago. There's no owner's son. There's no cap, everything that goes with the marketing and everything else, which I'm all for that, but it's way less of what it was at that level. And he talks about on NFL teams, you have the owner, the president, the general manager, the personnel director, blah, 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 which I will say, I mean, when he was
Bill
here,
was the general manager.
He was some of those guys. But the no owner and no owner's son thing stood out to me because we've talked about before, like, hey, will Bill and the Crafts ever repair their relationship? Will Bill ever get a statue like Brady did? And one of the things I felt, and I don't know how you feel, but once Robert's no longer in charge of the team, then maybe Bill and Jonathan can come together. And there was the Wickersham article after Bill left the Patriots said that Robert wanted to fire him after 2022, and it was Jonathan that talked him out of it. And I remember reading that being like, whoa, okay, Jonathan talked him out of it. But now, I mean, this comment, and it's not the first time he's mentioned a, quote, owner's son. And I don't know if he, and this, it's obviously a Jonathan Kraft thing, and Jonathan Kraft did say some bad things about him in the Dynasty documentary. But, I mean, the Raiders are currently run by an owner's son, and they didn't hire Bill, right? Stephen Jones has a large voice, but I've heard they have a good relationship. But my point is that it's mostly about Jonathan, but I wonder if this is also him talking about the other teams that didn't hire him.
I don't know. First of all, calling out anyone's sons, I think Bill just should probably step aside, in my opinion, from that conversation because he's got his kids running around every football team that he's involved in. So if he finds it obnoxious that the Kraft's nepotism interferes with his job, like, he does the same thing. So, you know, glass house for Bill Belichick there, which I don't have a problem with. Like, you want to work with your kids or you want to turn this into a family business, by all means. Like, I think that Steve Belichick in particular probably got a lot more criticism than he deserved for
being Bill's
son.
Brian's an actual really good coach, by the way.
Yeah, but even the way you say that, like, there's a, you know,
I have to say actually, right? Be like, yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, he is.
But
and there
yeah,
was a lot more
just,
in this, but
like for me, it's like Bill. I get taking shots at the NFL because he probably finds it totally ridiculous that there's not another team out there that wanted to take a chance on him as being the head coach, especially Atlanta, and bringing in
or
all
Dallas.
The baggage that comes with him and him running the program. But at the same time, it's like, how long are we going to have the sniping? Like, I'm so tired of these two old guys sniping at each other. Can everybody just move on without having to every availability where it's talking about each other be talking about how much better it is since that person's gone? Like, I think that, for example, like, I think Kraft has tried, Robert Kraft has tried more so to be generous about talking about Bill, but he can't help it either. He goes on the Breakfast Club and says I fired him after they did so much pomp and circumstance about it being like a conscious uncoupling, like Gwyneth Paltrow. And so I don't know. For me, it's just like I'm looking forward in a curiosity driven way to what UNC does as a football team. Of course, I'm going to be watching it on Labor Day. I'm not a huge college football fan, but I'm curious. But it's like, can you do the UNC thing without having to talk about Jonathan Kraft? Like, can we just get over it? Like, I'm so over it.
And there was a lot in this. Like, he talks about recruiting and how different that is than free agency. Like, there was a lot of interesting tidbits, but it was one of the first things he mentioned about the differences between the NFL and college, that there's no owner and no owner's son. Like, that's, and not like there aren't people he has to answer to some people at UNC, but obviously maybe not to the same degree as the Patriots. And I think this comes down to, if he wins, it's a much different story, because then you would have, like, Brady leaves New England, wins right away. If he goes down there and they're good, like really good, then all of a sudden it's going to be, oh, they both left and they were both good when they left. But the guy that was here, a.k.a. the owner, well, they still weren't good. But if he goes down there and he sucks, then I think you'll see some victory laps from the Crafts being like, see, we told you it was all done, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's what you'll see.
We have some breaking news. Can we get the breaking news sounder, my friends? We have some breaking Patriots news.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program.
This is breaking news. Breaking news on WEEI is presented by the BetMGM Network. For all your betting needs, check out the newly rebranded BetMGM Network on the Odyssey app or locally on WEEI AM 850.
This comes from Jordan Schultz, NFL insider. He just posted on X, sources: Patriots wide receiver Jalen Polk will miss the entire 2025 season due to a shoulder injury that requires surgery. The 2024 second round pick saw multiple specialists, and surgery was determined to be the best course of action with the goal of being fully healthy for 2026. So, hey, I triple checked this from Jordan Schultz, but gives you a little clarity on the wide receiver depth chart for the Patriots. Unfortunately, the second-round pick from last year, Jalen Polk, is going to miss the entire 2025 season. We saw him go down on that shoulder injury in a preseason game. Haven't seen him since. It's been very quiet about what was going to happen with him. I thought this was a strong possibility because the way that he walked off the field, he was against the Commanders. He was holding that arm and that shoulder so awkwardly. It was pretty obvious that it was the one that he had surgery on. So, I gotta say, like, Polk's had the worst on ramp into the NFL that I can remember.
And ironically, this injury is going to probably not only prolong his time with the Patriots, but give him a greater chance to play down the road. Because I think before this injury in training camp, I don't think he was going to make the roster anyway. I mean, Kayshon Boutte was repping above him. Mac Hollins obviously came back and repped high right away. Kyle Williams, it felt like, was repping above Jalen Polk and was a rookie anyway that they like a lot. So maybe this will give him an opportunity to rehab fully, you know, get immersed in the playbook, come back stronger, and have a chance to make the roster next year. But like I said, this injury, in an ironic way, helps his chances of staying around here, because I don't think he was going to make the roster if he doesn't get hurt and put on IR.
But he continues to be somebody who I just think is, he and Javon Baker are so far behind the program where they're supposed to be in the NFL. Like, not even just where they're supposed to be, for where those guys, where Jalen Polk in particular was picked. And just like the 2019 draft, he's always going to be compared to Ladd McConkey, because you were sitting in a position where you could have had Ladd and you decided to go this other way. I feel bad for the guy. Unfortunately for him, it is a lot of clarity on the wide receiver room. I think right now, if you had to ask me today, barring any big trade for Terry McLaurin, I would say that your depth chart goes Stephon Diggs, Kayshon Boutte, Pop Douglas, Kyle Williams, Efton Chisholm is the sixth guy. Who's the fifth one who I'm forgetting here? Oh, Mac Collins.
And Mac Collins.
Mac Collins. Those are your six guys. I don't know what's going on with Kendrick Bourne. He's been completely ghost since that in-game or in-stadium practice. So I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if they're going to try to trade him. He doesn't seem to have a place in this anymore.
I think the only way he stays is if Josh specifically says, I want him around because I worked with him before and he was good here and he's a veteran. Otherwise, I just think he gets traded or released. Because like you said, he's missed so much time and these other guys you mentioned have all earned their place on the roster. So I just don't. Maybe if they're a little worried about Diggs' health, but Bourne has a health issue himself. So I think Josh would have to say, this is a dude I definitely want.
Yeah, I just don't think that that's enough at this point. Like, I feel like everybody kind of penciled in Kendrick Bourne at the beginning of the offseason because they were saying, well, Josh McDaniels is back and this is kind of Josh's guy. He had his most successful career season under Josh McDaniels, and after that he was in the doghouse
the
with
Patricia
in that whole situation. Yeah. And then he tore his ACL and wasn't the same guy coming back right away. I just feel like there's certain guys where it's like, unfortunately, you might like aspects about them, but they're kind of missing the boat here. And if you don't fit into the offense, you don't carve out your role in what is a pretty flat wide receiver room in terms of quality, like, I think you just got to go. I love Kendrick as a guy. I don't think he fits in this.
I think if you can get a sixth rounder
for him, I'm at the point where I'm like, yeah, send him to the Niners for a sixth rounder. Is that crazy?
No, I don't think that's crazy at all. That would be a good fit for him too. And I think it's too bad because personality-wise, locker room-wise, all that, he has like everything you would want. Like, he's a great guy. Everybody loves him. He works hard, does everything he's asked. But again, he's not better than Diggs. He's not better than Booty or Douglas. And it's a little bit different position, but he's not better than Douglas. I'm not putting him above Kyle Williams, who's shown a lot despite not really impacting the stat sheet. So I just don't see him above any of those guys. And on top of it, he's hurt. Like, if he was fully healthy and he was right there with some of those guys,
if he was in there every single day. Yeah. The way that this worked, though, even in OTA, sorry to stop on you there, but in OTA, it's like, I don't know if you were there the day that he was out, the person who was bumped up into his spot was Efton Chisholm. Right. And I think that kind of indicates how low he was on the depth chart, even just to start the off season, that he was already somebody who was lower down rather than being somebody who we thought in 2022 was going to be maybe your second best, maybe your best receiver on the team. It's just he's really gotten lost in this process.
And it's unfortunate because you go back to 22, I think Patricia and Judge were wrong to put him in the doghouse, so he kind of got screwed there. And then he has the ACL injury in 23, and he was on his way to having a career best season that year. He's going to surpass 21. And then last year, the offense was a mess, and he didn't look like he worked his way fully back. This year, maybe he's fully back, but then he gets hurt again. It's just been an unfortunate, really, since 2022, like this unfortunate string of incidents, some that he had no control over, this unfortunate string of incidents. But I agree. I just don't see him being, as much as I like him, part of that group.
While we talk about these wide receivers, because Jalen Polk is now going on IR, where are you at with Stephon Diggs right now? I know our mutual friend Phil Perry has gotten some flack from fans because of his back and forth that he had with Mike Vrabel about Stephon Diggs and Stephon Diggs, what he said to Diana Rossini about not being excited and the weirdness around there. He has had a bit of a quieter training camp than I expected. And I think maybe it's just we all got so excited that he was coming off of his ACL looking as healthy and sprightly as he did to start out training camp. And then wasn't somebody who completely exploded in 11v11 team competitive periods. Where are you at with your confidence level and who he might be on the depth chart?
So when they signed him, I thought it was going to be like a week five thing. He'd be back. And now I think he's going to be out there week one. So that's progress, and I'm happy about that. I'm with you. He hasn't been super explosive making plays left and right. Part of that might be they're managing him. But I think it's similar to when they signed him, what we talked about. Like, he's going to be in a really good offense, he would be a number two receiver. He's going to be your number one. He's the best receiver you've had since Julian Edelman retired. It is someone a defense is going to have to game plan around, which you haven't had in a while. So I think he's going to be pretty good. Do I think he's going to have 1,000 yards receiving? No. Do I think he's going to have 15 touchdowns? No. but I think he's going to be pretty good if he can be in that 800-ish yard range, which Kendrick Bourne, by the way, in 2021 was at 800, then I think that's a success given where you were last year and where he is coming off the injury. So I think he's going to play week one, but I don't think he's going to be really good until maybe week 4 or 5 range. So we'll get him earlier. He just won't be as good right away.
All right. Tempered expectations for Stephon Diggs. And if you missed the breaking news, Jalen Polk is going on the IR. So that gives you a little bit more clarity about his situation, maybe about who's going to be making this team as cut down day looms next week for the 53-man roster. And our final preseason game tonight, we'll talk about our expectations for that final preseason game after this final break.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Andy Hart is in studio now and he's saying crazy things off air.
I really
absolutely
am.
Crazy nonsense off air.
I'm in a great mood.
You think he's crazy on air? Why are you in such a good mood, Andy Hart?
Because I went to... It's basically tantamount to seeing a unicorn. I went to the RMV and had a great experience this morning.
You want to shout out this local branch?
New Bedford, RMV, okay. Window number 8. Very nice woman. Helped me with everything
window
I needed.
Window 8?
Yep.
What's up?
I will say I was dubious. You know how they do the whole system? They give you the little receipt, and then it's like, now serving L112.
It always makes me think of the last scene in Beetlejuice when he sits down and he has the super long number.
I don't even know if I've seen Beetlejuice from start to finish. So
really?
Yeah,
I've never seen it either. I'm sorry.
Guys,
oh my God, get some culture.
I had a good experience at the Taunton one. So maybe Southern Mass, they just do a better job.
Maybe they're just improving.
Yeah, turn the corner. Because it was a cliche for a while. I mean, hell, you had, what was the movie with the sloth RMV, the kids movie? Zootopia. Going to the RMV.
Oh, yeah,
and
that. I remember that.
Strangely,
yeah.
I haven't seen Zootopia as someone who doesn't have little children.
It was in the trailer.
And you don't have to have children to see animated or you know CGI or anything. Cool
Shrek
movies.
Is an American classic.
True.
Adults saw that.
I don't watch cartoons. Unless it's South Park. I like South Park.
Okay. But yeah, I'm in a great mood. Great mood, which is good because I think there's a big baseball series that yesterday I was a little more skeptical of and pushing the panic button, and I'm still panicked. Because the only reason to have legitimate logical hope is that it's baseball, Ray, because that's my theory that baseball, when you think you have it figured out, tells you you're an idiot and goes in the other direction. But on paper, the Yankees, who've hit 14 home runs in 2 days and are kind of rolling into this series with Giancarlo Stanton thinking it's 2019 again, should sweep the Red Sox. But there seems to be more optimism in Red Sox Nation, so I'm going to jump on the optimism bandwagon today. I don't know why.
It's nice to do some radio with Andy Hart when he's being optimistic.
Yeah, it's rare.
I'm not really used to it.
It's rare. You know, it's few and far between. And don't get me wrong, by about 8:45 tonight, if the Red Sox are down 5-1 and I'm annoyed, it's out the window and gone forever. Because this is a season-on-the-brink kind of series, correct?
It's crazy, too, because you look after this series, like you have Baltimore, you have Pittsburgh, like the A's a couple times. So you have a lot of winnable games. But if you leave this series losing, let's say, 3 out of 4, you're not going to – those other games are winnable, but you're not going to feel good going into those games.
Nope.
And now at what point is Seattle, who made all these additions at the trade deadline, going to start to just get a lot better?
Well, I think people have missed the fact that you've been lucky that Seattle is scuffling, too. Because if Seattle wasn't scuffling, you'd be in real trouble.
Like, they're going to take off at
some
point.
They're due for one of your kind of winning streaks. Yeah. You already had your 10-gamer and then your 7-gamer. They're due for a 7 or a 10-game winning streak. So, and then the other thing is, if you lose a few, the narrative of Alex Cora's August Red Sox nosedive is just going to take over.
So what you're telling me is you're not going to be watching every snap of the incredible preseason football game featuring Jackson Dart and probably Josh Dobbs.
I actually am going to be.
Will you double screen in it?
As long as it sets up properly, because I've come into a second screen for the basement that I need to go get set up with a Roku and everything so I can watch both. But the plan is...
And your son is now at college, so you don't have him to help you with the technology.
That's where I'm a little worried.
Okay.
So, but if all goes well, yes, I will be doing the basement double TV thing tonight to watch Yankees, Red Sox, and the Patriots game. Because also, you mentioned my son being away at college. I think I have a new perspective on the third preseason game. You know how we all bitch and moan like, oh, it's stupid, it's lame.
It means so much to these guys.
Like somewhere there is a parent on the edge of their seat watching their kid play knowing it's like, make the team or get a real job next week.
I've been with that NFL parent before, and it's the most stressful situation I've ever witnessed.
I can imagine. So I want to be a little bit more sympathetic, empathetic. I struggle with those two words to that situation tonight. So don't tell me that nobody's playing, it's boring, it's stupid. Nope. It's a career crossroads for many, many people tonight.
No, I agree. That's the coolest thing about this. And back in the day, the fourth preseason game. Like, that's the coolest thing about it is these guys, and also maybe you'll see Kyle Duggar playing in, at the end of the game, too.
Well, that's kind of just sad.
But it's cool. It's really cool for all those other guys that maybe it's their only time playing pro football.
Cool for the guys fighting for a job to be like, I'm playing next to a guy who makes $58 million. This is kind of cool. I make like $450 a week or whatever they give us during camp. So that's kind of cool.
Still not going to sneeze at anyone who wants to give me $450 a week. How are you feeling about the Efton Chisholm experience these days?
So, I mean, I have to accept after last week that he's going to make the team.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And
we argued about this like a month and a half ago.
I still don't necessarily see it. And
he's not Amendola. Like, everybody needs to slow down.
I agree with that.
But I appreciate Julian Edelman bringing up one of my first arguments in this whole debate was, how many slot receivers are you going to carry? And Edelman was like, it's tough to have duplicative players there. I think I just made up a word, but we'll just go right.
No, that sounds right.
Okay.
We'll say redundant.
Redundancy there. So that's an issue, too. Although I've started to have a little shift that Efton Chisholm has a little bit more of that find the open space in zone and sit his ass down than Pop Douglas does.
Hmm.
Pop Douglas has more talent.
Yeah, that's why I see a little Jacoby Myers in Efton Chisholm. Like, everyone wants to compare him to Amendola.
There's definitely more of that.
The when you remember Myers, when he would just kind of, teams would play zone against him and he'd just find a way to be in that one open spot. And some of that was his history as a quarterback.
Absolutely.
Too.
Or
but,
just athleticism and knowledge.
Yeah, and he was a little stronger, like as a blocker and all that. I feel like Chisholm is kind of like that. So,
and it's interesting. I think we tend to think that all those guys are the same, when in reality, the guy I think he's now becoming is more Jacoby Myers or even Travis Kelce. That's how he plays.
Hold on a second, Andy.
See, she did it. I knew she was going to do it. She's not getting the point. I'm not talking about production. I'm not talking about comps and skills or size. I'm talking about the ability to read
you
a field, find a hole.
Act that way that you just said that Efton Chisholm reminds you of Travis Kelce.
Little
I mean,
bit.
I'm like
soft spot in the defense.
I like that you're putting Myers and Kelce in the same plane. Too.
Well, it's a style and a way of play.
And I think
Pop Douglas, my
a
counterpoint,
route running and, style and understanding space
and even,
style.
And Pop even, Douglas doesn't do that.
And even Edelman wasn't a carbon copy of Welker. Like they've had different types of
guys.
They've
all been different.
It's been
Troy
the position.
Brown, the whole thing.
All right, it's Colossal Lobster Roll season at the 99. Choose hot buttered or traditional, both built to the hilt with chunks of North Atlantic lobster served with fries and coleslaw. You gotta love the nines. That's Andy Hart. This has been John Lyons and Mego. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back with you tomorrow, but now it's time for WEI Afternoons.
Thank you, guys. That was fun.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.